right?
Yeah.
Does that sound right? Yeah, excellent. All right, so people can go to JOPC.
Prepare to experience the strongest radio allowable by law. Secrets will be revealed. Myths dispelled. From the studio gym where excuses never apply, it's Superhuman Radio with your host, Carl Lenore.
Hey, welcome back to another episode of Superhuman Radio. It's July, and we've got lots of great topics to cover all this month, starting off right away with a special episode of Science for Humans. We're going to talk about caffeine, the good, the bad, and the ugly. Then, a recent study shows that higher fitness levels reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes. Duh. We needed a study to tell us that. And then lastly, this is a great one. The link between dopamine and sweets. Your desire to eat sweet foods may be linked to how dopamine affects your brain. This is going to be a good discussion. But first, without further ado, I must introduce my co-host.
This is Science for Humans with Dr. Jeff Galini.
Dr. J.
Hey, Carl, how are you?
Oh, Dr. J, I have a confession to make.
Uh-oh, what's that?
I used caffeine today.
You did?
Yes. Actually, I'm going to tell you the truth. So we went to Asheville, North Carolina, and I used a pre-workout. Actually, you may have heard of it. It's called Freakmaker Shock.
Oh, yeah, I have heard of that one.
Yeah, and so I actually used a scoop of that every morning to give me the energy to do all the fun things I wanted to do. And when I came home, I felt terribly sick. And so,
did you?
Yeah.
Well, that's because you haven't been taking much caffeine.
No,
you know?
I haven't been using it at all. But it was like I just figured I'd live recklessly and try it. But this morning I had to have a cup of coffee just to kind of I'm going to have to titrate and slowly reduce my caffeine consumption again. So here I am again, Dr. J, addicted to caffeine.
I know. Well, you know, that's kind of why I entitled this The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. I should have said The Good and the Bad and the Not So Bad or something because
yeah.
You know, caffeine is kind of an interesting thing. I think when we talk about caffeine, most people think about coffee, you know, because that's where most of the caffeine consumption comes from. But, you know, like you and I, when we think caffeine, we think of pre-workouts.
Yeah.
I mean, as in the sports nutrition, pre-workouts are caffeinated, you know. But anyhow, I had a question that came in that got me thinking about caffeine because there's so many studies that are all over the place. And I just thought it'd be a good topic to talk about, you know, what it is, what it does, and if it's good or bad.
So where does caffeine anhydrous come from? So those of us who use pre-workouts and some of us who used to buy bulk powders, we didn't even want to wait for the coffee to perk and cool off the drink. We would just take a scoop of caffeine anhydrous and throw it in our mouth. How do they make caffeine anhydrous, Dr. J?
You know, most of the caffeine that you find comes from when they decaffeinate the coffee.
I'll be damned.
Yeah.
So we pay extra for decaffeinated coffee, and then they take the caffeine and sell it somewhere else.
Yeah, exactly. So it's crazy.
Uh-huh.
You know, I mean, anytime you take something out of something, whether it's fat-free, sugar-free, gluten-free, it costs more. But, yeah, they take the caffeine out, so the caffeine is now free because they're charging you for that, and then they turn around and sell that caffeine. You know, you got to purify it, and it goes through some processes. But most of, like I said, most of the caffeine that's on the market is from those decaffeinated beverages.
So caffeine, okay, so I drank this weekend also. I have to go to confession now. See, I'm going to bless me, Father, if I have sinned. It's been.
Oh boy, you really had a good weekend.
Debauchery, I say. So, I drank. You know, and I know alcohol's no good for me. There's nothing good about alcohol. If you want resveratrol, there's lots of ways to get it other than alcohol. But I enjoyed drinking and kind of cutting loose. But caffeine, I'm not so sure is only bad. There's lots of good research out there that shows caffeine may be protective against things like neurological disorders, like Parkinson's disease and even Alzheimer's disease. But where does caffeine become bad? Is it good in low doses? What do you think?
Well, you know, I think this is the thing. When you look at the research out there, and we're going to talk about some of the newer research but I've kind of debunked it. I mean, personally, I'm going to start out by saying I think in moderation, caffeine is good, but you got to be aware that there are side effects and there are things that can occur. But the coffee caffeine that's associated with all these side effects is typically because your typical coffee drinker is not a healthy person. They're sediment, they smoke, they drink. I mean, you know, that's where most of the diseases that are associated with coffee come from. You know, it's just the lifestyle that comes with coffee drinking, you know. But when you look at coffee itself or caffeine itself, you know, as basically it stimulates the body to produce nitric oxide, which gets blood flowing. I mean, we use nitric oxide products, so what's wrong with that? You know, so again, I think as a central nervous stimulant, there is a lot of good benefits to caffeine. It really comes down to, you know, moderations and the amount that you use, because caffeine is addictive. You know, I think some people say that it's not, but you and I both know it is.
Oh,
it's
yeah.
Very addictive.
After using high doses of caffeine for just 5 days and then completely not using any caffeine for just a couple days, I can tell you that the effects are profound on the nervous system.
If you can use, you know, a small amount, you know, a half a cup of coffee, not too strong. I mean, again, I think these are where some of the benefits come. But, you know, what happens is you get resistant to that, so you have to drink more and more. When I used to be a caffeine addict, man, I mean, you know, just from the coffee consumption alone, you know, my coffee was so strong in the morning that I'd put a flashlight through the pot, and if you could see through it, it wasn't strong enough. I wouldn't drink anything that tasted like tea.
Right.
I would drink a pot of that, and then on the way to work, I'd stop and get, you know, a triple shot espresso, and then drink coffee all day long, and then do the pre-workouts and stuff. And it just got to where you had to use so much, and you have these ups and downs where you're just tired, so you're constantly, you know, looking for mental alertness from that drug. And
it is
a drug.
And it's a drug, and I want to make a special emphasis here. We're talking later in the show about the linkage between dopamine and craving sweets. The dopamine, mm-hmm. dopamine is the neurotransmitter associated with addiction. And interestingly, caffeine improves dopamine production and also dopamine reuptake, similar to cocaine. So when we think about, like for me, I can take some caffeine, and even before it starts hitting me, I want to take more because I think, wow, I want to really.
Yeah.
It is a drug. It is absolutely a drug because I was a product of the 60s and 70s, and I know what it is to do drugs. And there's a phenomenon that occurs in drug addicts. They actually start to get high when they decide to go and score their drugs.
And
caffeine is the same way. You take, when you start thinking about caffeine, you kind of get excited, like, oh, I'm going to have this feeling in a little while.
Yeah. I mean, you can go from 0 to 100 in just a few minutes. I mean, that's why they became so popular with pre-workouts. I mean, I remember, you know, being so tired that normally you would just not go to the gym, but your mind would say, no, you're getting ready to hit your pre-workout. You'll be fine here in a few minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, I used to train at 4:30 in the morning. What'd we do? We drank coffee, and then we popped a couple Magnum 357s, and you'd have a killer workout. But, again, it's like anything. I think moderation. But, you know, one of the studies that came out in Australia, which was actually interesting, that kind of stoked this whole thing, is they're claiming that caffeine will cause you to gain weight.
Really?
And I thought, now this is interesting. I need to read this study. And so before I tell you the whole thing about it, what they did was is they used mice or rats, I can't remember, and they actually gained weight. But the issue was that certain types of coffees are high in polyphenols and CGAs, and these are actually what can cause those situations. But what happened was is they're saying the caffeine stimulated cortisol production, which it was really part of those CGAs and polyphenol. And if you know, you know, cortisol's main role is to facilitate that fight or flight mechanism,
mm-hmm.
which is designed to basically save our bodies from physical threats. And what it does is it increases blood pressure, speeds up our metabolism, our absorption of carbohydrates, and it increases the blood sugar in the system.
Yes.
So that will feed muscles during a stressful time. Sounds like a good thing. But cortisol also promotes the release of insulin, which is necessary to now facilitate that excess glucose that's moving into the cells. And what they're now saying is that because of that whole glucose in the cell, insulin, you now become more hungry and you're going to eat more.
Interesting.
So, you know, again, it makes a lot of sense, but, you know, after I kind of read the whole thing, I said, you know, that's kind of debunked. I mean, I think there are people who drink coffee and eat more. I mean, you know, wherever coffee is served, it's usually as a dessert, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's where the real issue is that you do become more hungry and you do want to eat. I don't think the caffeine is directly related to weight gain, but obviously there are some people gaining weight and drinking coffee. But then again, you know, caffeine is used in most all thermogenic products. And is actually a good part of a weight loss program, you know, to increase the metabolic rate. So, again, there's a lot of goods to it, and there's a lot of bads, but most of it is when you just take too much and you become addicted to it.
I did a show back in 2007 or 2008 with a scientist from Rutgers University that looked at the effects of caffeine and coffee on people with type 2 diabetes. And what they determined was, and they did, it's interesting because they wanted to look at, because everybody says coffee is different than caffeine. So what they did was they took decaf coffee.
Right.
And they added caffeine anhydrous to one and left the other one decaf as the blinded side of the study. And so what they found was, that a 300 milligram dose of caffeine exhibits effects on blood sugar levels for 12 hours. Raising them for 12 hours, at which time blood sugar levels drop. So if you're having coffee at 10 a.m. in the morning and you're having a 300 milligram dose of it, then at 10 p.m. at night, you're going to become hypoglycemic, which they explained is part of the reason that type 2 diabetics who consume a lot of caffeine don't sleep well at night, number one. But number two, the second study, they took this group and they crossed them over. And they actually gave the ones that got the decaf coffee were able to reduce their type 2 diabetes medication by 50%.
Wow.
And so, you know, that's when I realized, like, look, caffeine definitely has an effect on blood sugar management. There's no doubt about it. This is, you know,
right.
And I don't care whether it's the insulin side, the cortisol side or what, it definitely does. Now that is not necessarily a bad thing if you know how to use it. That's the difference. Like you said, if you're a healthy person, you're training, you're doing things that are actually improving insulin sensitivity, then chances are you're not going to have as much of a problem as somebody whose insulin sensitivity is already down the tubes and now they're pouring more caffeine in.
Yeah, well, and that's the big issue, you know, when you look at, as we always talk about, you know, different people's activity levels. I mean, people that are unhealthy, if you're listening, quit drinking coffee. I mean, it is not good for you. If you are active, a little bit of caffeine actually is beneficial. But again, you got to learn to control it, you know, remembering it is a drug. And if you can use moderate amounts, medical professionals have agreed on that for healthy adults, that up to 400 milligrams per day appears to be safe. To me, that seems like a lot.
Well, but if, okay, so two questions.
Well, it's a lot if you take it at one dose,
yes.
I guess, like
yes.
Workouts.
If it's in one dose, it's a lot. But then again, it's still a lot if you think that even if you break it up into three, so you have a cup of coffee, you know, in the morning.
4 cups of coffee.
Yeah,
but you know,
when are you having your last cup? At 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon? That's going to impair your sleep.
Yeah, well, exactly. And I think that's where some of the issues are. So 400 milligrams of caffeine, you know, some of the pre-workouts have about 400. To me, that's way too much at one time. That's where you're going to have heart issues. You're going to have a whole lot of things. But, you know, spaced out, as they say, that's 4 cups of coffee, it's 10 cans of soda. I don't know anyone drinks that much. Or it's like 1 to 1.5, you know, energy drink, pre-workout drinks.
Yeah. I want to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we'll pick it up on the other side. We're talking about caffeine today. This is Science for Humans. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
How to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide. 4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You too can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's LivonLabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, Labs.com.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise with Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
What do professional athletes such as Kobe Bryant and A-list celebrities such as Selma Hayek have in common? They are all touting the benefits of bone broth. But unless you have countless hours to cook every week or can hire your own personal chef, you're probably missing out on these critical nutrients. Osteobroth is a high-protein, standardized, consistent bone broth in a convenient powdered form. Use promo code SHR for 20% off at osteobroth.com.
This is the Superhuman Channel, doing reps with the weight of the world.
Yes, Fever, it is just you and welcome I back against the solar system. But with this machine, we shall...
We're talking with Dr. Jeff Galini. He is my co-host here on Science for Humans. We're talking about caffeine. Dr. J, so I came clean about my caffeine use. You've gotten off caffeine. Have you stayed off it, or do you use it occasionally?
You know, occasionally. I was going to the reason why I got off it, and this was quite a few years ago, like I said, I used it for so long and so much of it that I was getting my stomach, you know, upset stomach, just that bloat. Now, some of it may have been gluten, but, again, this was quite a few years ago. So that was one of the reasons why I got off of it. But I do use it. I don't have a problem with it. More recently than not, you know, my wife drinks coffee, and she has now been getting up as early as I do, and she's already got a cup or two in her, and she wants to have a conversation, and my little decaffeinated tea doesn't quite kick in for a couple hours.
Right.
No, I use a little bit. I try not to use too much.
So let's talk about something. It's okay. We know that caffeine can throw you into a sympathetic overdrive, which is what leads to GERD, right? So when your sympathetic, parasympathetic nervous system becomes out of whack, tension, if you will, or stress in the body presents itself in a variety of ways. Tight muscles, one of those muscles is the esophageal sphincter. So caffeine in and of itself has been associated with making GERD worse for people who suffer from esophageal reflux disorders. However, it's very difficult to tease out the effects of the coffee and the effects of the caffeine, because most people are not using pure caffeine anhydrous and going, oh, my GERD gets worse. Most people are drinking a 20-ounce Starbucks coffee, which starts to make me wonder, what role does coffee today is, even as filtered as it is, the reason that coffee turns brown is because there is microparticles of the coffee in the water. And those particles seem to be getting larger and larger. When you drink a cup of coffee, it's got that sludge at the bottom of it. Some of that's going down your throat and into your stomach.
There's over 2,000 substances that are isolated from coffee. I mean, I don't have a problem using caffeine anhydrous. If I take a pre-workout, it doesn't bother my stomach one bit. But I've noticed lately, I tried to incorporate some green teas, and that really bothered me. Now, some of it was because it wasn't organic, and who knows how much pesticides and, you know, what was in there. But even the organic green tea seemed to bother me more than drinking a little bit of a coffee. But if I use my pre-workout with caffeine, it doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, I'm telling you, there's more to coffee than just the caffeine. The other thing is, coffee is a heavily sprayed crop.
Yep.
And this is, you know, I wonder sometimes about the chemicals that are on our coffee, getting into our coffee more. But more importantly, there's lots of evidence that the way coffee is handled in some of these third world countries makes it very prone to a variety of mold building up on the beans. They don't wash that stuff off. They grind it up and put it in your coffee.
Well, and you know, I've seen the beans come in. All the coffee roasters basically take those beans. They don't even wash them. And you're absolutely right. You know, coffee is a commodity that nobody checks on. It isn't like food. It doesn't have to be, you know, yeast and mold free, salmonella. No one tests coffee. So I think you're absolutely right. You know, that's where most of the issues are coming from, coffee, not the caffeine. And I think it doesn't matter whether you drink decaf or not. Now, keep in mind, you know, if you have caffeine side effects like, you know, insomnia because you're drinking, you know, caffeine or coffee too late at night, you're nervous, you're restless, you know, it can make you irritable, like I said, upset stomach, and of course, you know, increases your heartbeat. And some people even get, you know, like a muscle tremor. You know, again, you might be sensitive to caffeine, and you might need to cut it out or cut it back. But if you don't have problems with a pre-workout and you have problems with coffee or tea, then what you said, Carl, there's more than meets the eye.
Yeah, absolutely. So when we talk about caffeine and we talk about coffee, the benefits obviously are there, but there's another thing that we have to be careful of, and that is the caffeine anhydrous. Somebody died a couple of years ago. Remember the FDA was threatening to regulate caffeine anhydrous?
It's right.
Did they ever get that on?
No. You know, I don't think it ever made it because, you know, you're looking at, you know, Cokes and Pepsis. I mean, it's too widely used. It's the number one legal selling drug. They couldn't figure out how to go against the big boys. I mean,
interesting. I mean, because you can't kill yourself with caffeine. If you take an overdose of caffeine, you will die from it.
You know, I remember one time, this was quite a few years ago, when I was playing basketball with the YMCA League. And, of course, as an older basketball player, and I think at that time I was in my mid-30s, you know, playing against teens, I was using caffeine. And, of course, I took my little pre-workout juice back before it had caffeine in it, and I just took caffeine. And I wasn't measuring, but I remember coming home and actually having blood coming out of my urine.
Wow.
Now, I was probably, I'll bet I was getting like a gram. I mean, it was way too much. I was just spooning some out, you know.
Right, right. Yeah, I mean, there was a death a couple years ago from someone who bought a bulk caffeine anhydrous powder over the internet and then took way too much and ended up having a heart attack.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you know, you get that blood pumping and your heart can only go so much. You know, I don't think kids should be having caffeine and drinking coffee. I mean, I think what our parents used to tell us, I think if parents would have stuck with that story that it stunts your growth and all that. But, you know, what can you do now? Let's
also recognize that our parents and our grandparents, when they drank coffee, it was a 3 to 4 ounce serving.
Yeah, it was small, and it was typically at mealtime, wasn't it?
You know,
I mean, they might have one in the morning, but, yeah, the coffee cups were little. They weren't these big 32-ounce big gulps, you know.
Well, and you make another good point. How many people today, I never, ever saw my mother and father drink coffee on an empty stomach first thing in the morning. How many of us drink coffee on an empty stomach and then wonder why our stomach feels like crap?
Well, a friend of mine, Jerry Branham, I remember back in California, he used to always say, look, you know, if you're going to drink coffee, have it with a piece of toast because it helps absorb that acid and it's the other things in there. And that's probably why I started my pre-workouts with two pieces of sourdough toast, because I drank coffee and it seemed to help, you know. But he kind of had something to that. But, and you know, even look at overseas when you go, you know, even though their coffee is stronger, they don't drink very much, and they all add milk, which contains that calcium, so it kind of works like a Tums.
Ah, it buffers it a little bit.
I remember the first time I was over in Germany, and I had coffee, and they said, you want milk? I'm like, no, I want the milk. You can't drink like this. I'm like, yeah, I can. Whoo, was that some strong coffee.
Yeah.
But it was probably like an ounce or something, and when you added milk, it actually increased the how it tasted. It was actually good. But again, that's how they kind of watered out. So
Yeah, absolutely. Well, there you have it. A good discussion about caffeine. Obviously, some is good, too much is bad, and how you get your caffeine will play a role on how it affects your stomach. There's no doubt about that. And I think a small cup of coffee, nothing too powerful in the morning, is not a bad thing.
Yep.
Get cortisol levels up appropriately.
Yep.
And just don't abuse it. And make a rule. Don't drink coffee past a certain time of the day, 10 a.m. or whatever it is.
Yeah, exactly.
All right, Dr. J, thank you very much for your information today, brother.
All right, man. Take care. Have a good one, folks.
Talk soon. All right, so we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to actually start talking a little bit about fitness levels and how higher fitness levels reduce the risk of type 2 diabetes. I think it's an important discussion, but many of us are probably shaking our heads going, we knew this already. So let's see. Stay tuned.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carb B-G-U-I-D-E. Mitochondrial uncoupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse. 4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
A legendary name in hardcore supplementation. Iron Mag Labs. 100% original, patent pending, Andro compound. The most effective, hardcore, groundbreaking bodybuilding supplements in the world. Iron Mag Labs. Revolutionizing hardcore supplementation for more than a decade. Visit IronMagLabs.com. IronMagLabs.com.
From the makers of GLC 2000, now comes Actistatin Pro Athlete. The Actistatin formula gives you all four forms of glucosamine and chondroitin, plus Actistatin's triple patented delivery method to optimize cellular uptake and utilization of glucosamines, chondroitin, ascorbate, and manganese. Regenerate and maintain cartilage. Promote joint mobility and flexibility. Replenish lost collagen. Get 20% off your next order using the coupon code SHR. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the GLC banner ad today. Push the limits. Feel the difference with Actistatin.
Never before has an anti-estrogen been so powerful. The triazole formula is built on a potent, all-natural aromatase inhibitor called pizole, which has been shown in clinical trial to be as effective as a leading prescription aromatase inhibitor. Pizole works in concert with the rest of the triazole formula to control estrogen while simultaneously boosting testosterone significantly. In fact, one of triazole's testers had a 120% increase in total testosterone and a 257% increase in free testosterone. Triazole is available at bodybuilding.com, NutriPlanet.com, or where finest supplements are sold. For more information, check out GetDS.com.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You, too, can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at LivonLabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's liveonlabs.com, livonlabs.com.
You're listening to the Superhuman Channel. We're ripped and we're ready.
Welcome back to Superhuman Radio. You know, many of us in this audience have always assumed that exercise is protective against developing type 2 diabetes and pre-diabetes. But we know a lot of people who exercise and do have other bad lifestyle attributes that still develop type 2 diabetes. So the next discussion is about a 20-year study. My guest is Dr. Lisa Chow from the University of Minnesota. How you doing, Dr. Chow?
I'm doing fine, thank you.
What questions needed to be answered? What preceded this research, and then what questions were you trying to answer in this research?
So the premise has always been that fitness is good for you, and that, you know, having higher levels of fitness will reduce development of prediabetes and diabetes. That being said, it actually hasn't been really shown. What there has been studies were other studies done primarily in the 1990s in the Cooper Clinic, which basically showed high levels of fitness at baseline means reduced risk of prediabetes and diabetes, let's say 10 years down the line.
Mm-hmm.
But what our study actually does is to prospectively measure the fitness over time consistently, so not just at baseline, so that we can sort of see how changes in fitness over time can influence the development of prediabetes and diabetes in a very structured cohort study.
So how was the study designed? This is a 20-year study. This is wonderful when we have studies that follow people for such a length of time.
Actually, this study is part of a larger study called CARDIA, which is the Coronary Artery Risk Development in Young Adults study. And this has actually been going on for 30 years. And within CARDIA, they were interested in various factors that predict coronary artery risk factors. And what they did in the, like, 1980s, so, you know, 30 years ago, was to recruit people 18 to 25 and follow them. And what they did over the course of the study was to actually measure fitness at baseline, at year 7, and at year 20. And what we did is we took that data, and then we analyzed that. So this is actually part of a larger ongoing study as we are currently speaking.
So who made up the actual cohort, the subjects in this study?
It was actually just, it enrolled about 5,115 people from various sites in the United States. And they were just normal, everyday people. They actually wanted this to very much represent the normal young adult population.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what they did. I mean, they didn't specifically select for, you know, people who are heavier or lighter. They just basically enrolled young adults. One component of CARDIA is that they did want roughly half African Americans and half Caucasians to get sort of that ethnic difference. And so there is, of course, that.
And then did they also look at the differences between, the, you know, physiology of men and women? Because we're learning now that science has basically ignored how women are different than men when they look at a variety of different research.
Yes, that was also an important priority of CARDIA, to also enroll men and women in roughly equal amounts. So, again, it very much wanted to just represent the general U.S. young adult population and to really measure them using, and they actually came in. They came in at designated visits, and, you know, they had their blood measured, they had demographics measured, you know, height, weight, all sorts of things measured in a very structured way in clinic visits so that it's all well organized.
Well, and also you're not depending on diaries or anything.
No.
or recall, because we know that when those types of studies are produced, that people generally, as a rule, over-report what they perceive as good behaviors and under-report what they perceive as bad behaviors, and then the data gets skewed.
Well, I have to say, with this study, they did, you know, have in-person recalls of, let's say, their physical activity or their diet. So there is that component. But, for example, you know, we measured diabetes by based on OGTT results and blood results and looking at their meds, you know. That was, you know, rather than them saying they have diabetes, it was actually mm-hmm. measured. So, mm-hmm. Yes, there was a recall component in terms of physical activity and diet, but in terms of, like, let's say, our outcomes, which is, like, you know, change in weight, development of diabetes, that was actually objectively measured.
So what kind of physical activity was I guess, there are different levels of physical activity, right? There are people who just walk, or they say, oh, I garden, and then there's people who say, you know, I'm an avid runner, or I go to the gym 5 days a week. Did you account for these different types of physical activity?
We did. So in our, so basically the main premise of our finding was that higher fitness, regardless of BMI, was protective against development of prediabetes and diabetes in this prospective cohort study. And we actually measured fitness by some an objective measure, which is a treadmill, basically how long they lasted on a treadmill.
Mm-hmm.
We also tried to account for their physical activity using their questionnaire, and we did adjust for that. But, you know, it's hard to measure physical activity just based on recall alone. The best measures are often they have to wear a little monitor to measure their physical activity, and that wasn't a part of the study.
Yeah, that would be great today because we have so many activity trackers now that it would be simple to enlist people who already have a Fitbit, for instance, or something like that.
Well, the problem with Fitbit is that Fitbit is very good at measuring sort of walking or the general volume.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're doing something that isn't necessarily walking, then the Fitbit won't necessarily
yeah.
measure that. So.
Yeah, you're right. Especially if you're like, if you engage in resistance training, you know, it's
yes.
not calculating the work that you're doing.
Mm-hmm.
So what did you find? Give me a snapshot and then we'll kind of go from there.
So the main finding we noted is that when you, if you maintain your fitness, or basically to higher fitness over 20 years, so whether that was something you started off with or whether that's something you developed over time, generally the higher fitness prevented, really reduced the risk for developing prediabetes and diabetes, regardless of your BMI. So there's been a lot of interest about fat and fit, on how people can be fat, but then they are fit, and that really...
But wait a minute, I have to jump in here.
Yeah.
One of the fatal flaws of BMI is it doesn't take into account lean body mass, right? It assumes that I am 238 pounds right now, mm-hmm. and it assumes that I am the average 238-pound person, but I've got a 34-inch waist. I carry a lot of muscle. So BMI does not... It doesn't account for that. It just says, oh, you're, I mean, according to BMI, I'm obese. I'm a 25, I think, or 26 or something like that. So mm-hmm. when you look at these people, did you notate any type of body types? Like this person is clearly obese, or this person is very muscular when looking at and then comparing the BMIs?
You know, that is a true limitation of our study. The best actually measures for that would actually look at body composition. Let's
right.
say you can figure out their fat mass and fat-free mass, and that was not available. But that being said, you know, we did measure the same person over time. And so we looked at their change in BMI over time for that given person. And so in a way that helps normalize it a little bit. But yes, that is a definite flaw of BMI. You don't really distinguish between good weight and bad weight.
Yeah, and you know, there's a lot of good emerging research that dissects what we're talking about here. We've done a show a couple years ago about a treadmill test that is predictive of longevity, which kind of mm-hmm. feeds into this whole, you know, the fitter you are, the chances of not developing type 2 diabetes. But mm-hmm. we've also looked at the role of muscle mass in and of itself intrinsically and strength in and of itself intrinsically mm-hmm. and how that correlates with longevity and being disease-free as you age.
Mm-hmm.
So this is really great stuff, really, really great stuff. What I'd like to do is take a break.
Okay.
And when we come back, I want to pick it up on the other side. This is an interesting discussion. You're listening to Superhuman Radio. Stay tuned.
Eat dessert again with the new 100% natural line of high-protein, low-carb Quest protein bars. I love lemon cream pie and strawberry cheesecake, but you can choose from chocolate peanut butter, coconut cashew, or cinnamon roll as well. No matter which one you try, you'll feel like you're eating dessert. But this is no ordinary dessert. With 20 grams of high-quality whey protein isolate, 17 grams of prebiotic fiber, and sweetened with stevia, these bars will make you feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com. And click the Quest Protein Bar banner ad to learn more about these clean and delicious protein bars.
Hey, this is Carl. Start your day just like I do with a high-dose lipospheric vitamin C from Livon Labs. You, too, can benefit from Livon Labs' lipospheric delivery system. No more pills or powders. That's outdated technology. Livon Labs has the world's most efficient vitamin delivery system, period. Learn a lot more today at livonlabs.com and benefit from their new reduced pricing. That's liveonlabs.com, L-I-V-O-N, labs.com.
Superhuman Radio has the smartest and most dedicated health and fitness listeners found anywhere in the world. If you're trying to tap this market of greater than 50 million health fitness consumers, you simply can't do better than advertising on Superhuman Radio. Our sponsors tell us Superhuman Radio outperforms other forms of advertising time and time again. If you're tired of wasting valuable advertising dollars and need a new way to build your client base, go to superhumanradio.com and click on the Advertise With Us link. It just may be the best thing you have ever done for your business.
Do you know how to properly use carbohydrates to ignite your performance in the field and in the gym? You will now, thanks to this free book by EFX Sports. The Carb User's Guide for Maximum Performance reveals why omitting carbohydrates from your diet can totally crush your gains. Ever wonder how many grams you need for your specific sport? Not anymore. We give you the critical number you need to dominate your competition. You'll even discover the super carb that's taking the athletic world by storm. You must try it to believe it. Go to getcarbolin.com/carb guide today and get your copy absolutely free. Once again, it's getcarbolin.com/carbguide.
AnabolicMinds.com is the the premier website for credible information on building muscle, burning fat, supplementation, and more. With over 100,000 active registered members and over 2.5 million posts, it's one of the largest communities on the internet to get help and answers to your question. It's also the place that the official Superhuman Radio Forum is hosted. Visit AnabolicMinds.com today and get into the action. AnabolicMinds.com. Learn. Teach. Lead.
4.6 million years of evolution gave us the blueprint for the perfect protein supplement for humans. So why do all protein supplement manufacturers ignore it? We don't. The first human-appropriate protein supplement is Thrive Advanced. Built around the blueprint of mother's milk, Thrive Advanced contains the amino acids, peptides, micronutrients, enzymes, probiotics, and vitamins that support protein absorption and assimilation. All of our dairy proteins come from happy cows on pastures here in the United States and are low-heat pasteurized. You'll never find any artificial sweeteners, additives, or ingredients. You won't even find thickeners or gums in Thrive Advanced. And we back up our label claims with post-production lab analysis that's available right on our website. Visit superhumanradio.com and click the Thrive Advanced banner ad and use code SHR and save 50% off your entire order today.
Now, the number one best-selling non-hormonal anabolic agent at PredatorNutrition.com. Progenidrex has established itself as the category killer. If you're having difficulty gaining muscle while staying lean, you owe it to yourself to try Progenidrex. 100% of store reviews rated it at 5 stars, the highest possible ranking. And today, right now, there are guys pouring their hearts out in the gym with little or nothing to show for it. Don't waste any more time. Go to PredatorNutrition.com today and get Progenidrex, the world's absolute best drug-free muscle gainer.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where we use oxygen for the power of good.
Welcome back. We're talking with Dr. Lisa Chow from the University of Minnesota, and we're talking about a 20-year study that followed individuals, assessed their fitness level and their propensity to develop type 2 diabetes and pre-diabetes. And the relationship is there. I mean, the fitter you are, you are somewhat perhaps protected from developing these this condition. So you looked at blood sugar and you did an OGGT, you said, right, a glucose tolerance test. Did you look at insulin?
No, we don't actually use insulin to make the diagnosis of diabetes. So the diagnosis of diabetes was based on several criteria, fasting blood sugar or oral glucose tolerance result, or a measure called hemoglobin A1C, or if the patient reports that they are on medicines for treatment of diabetes, so you know, such as insulin. But in terms of measuring insulin itself, that is not part of the diagnosis for diabetes.
And I think that's a mistake by the medical orthodoxy, and here's why I say that. And I've been actually saying this for probably close to 10 years now. So looking at glucose without looking at the amount of insulin the person is producing. So you can have somebody who's got really great fasting blood sugar. Oh, they're 80, and you're like, wow, you're really doing good. But when you look at the amount of insulin they're having to produce to keep their blood sugar at that level, you realize that they are an accident waiting to happen. And I really think that medical orthodoxy needs to start looking at insulin along with blood sugar in order to make real sense about the data that they're capturing. That's just my own humble opinion. I'm not a scientist. I just do this radio show. But I see that as being a very important emerging change, I hope, in research.
Yeah, you know, that's a good point. I mean, what you're essentially asking is, you know, for example, if you have a glucose of 80, does it take, let's say, an insulin of 5 to get to that level or an insulin of 100 to
yes.
get to that level? And obviously, if you need an insulin 100 to get to level, they're more insulin resistant. And we do use the relationship of glucose relative to insulin to measure insulin resistance, and we use that actually in scientific studies as a screening. But practically speaking, if somebody we think is insulin resistant, and usually we don't need a test to do that, you know, our recommendation is generally diet and lifestyle changes, possibly a little bit of metformin. So if it won't necessarily change our management, I guess we don't necessarily
yeah.
measure it, and that's why it's not commonly used.
So let's talk about the individuals who are actually on meds. Did you see any reversal of type 2 diabetes during the study period and a in concert increase in fitness level?
Yes. Unfortunately, with our study, you know, again, this represents the average U.S. population. Only a very small amount actually increased fitness. I think it was about maybe 10%, like 7 to 10%. And so most people declined fitness. So we didn't have enough who developed diabetes who increased fitness till we see a reversal. But that, you know, that would make sense.
I like that you came up with some what could be prescriptive. You came up with some amounts of activity that seem to be protective. Talk about that.
You know, what we found is that when your fitness increases by one met as measured, you actually reduce your risk for developing pre-diabetes and diabetes. Well, the question is, what does it take to increase the fitness by one met? Well, we didn't do the study, but there was a study done out of Duke, which found that if you took people who are sedentary overweight and you had them do, let's say, 8 months aerobic training at about 14 calories per kilogram per week, that can increase you by one met. Now, recently, there's been a lot of really interesting work looking at high-intensity interval training that has a lot less training volume but a lot higher intensity that can also increase your intensity by one met. But the role of high-intensity interval training in reducing diabetes and prediabetes has not yet been done, because that is really kind of a very new concept for what we're doing.
And really, I mean, we have a very fit audience, and many of us employ high-intensity interval training, but it has to be done sparingly. There's a very, very thin line in pushing yourself into an overtrained situation where the body actually responds unfavorably. It starts to store more fat because it thinks the environment is hostile. So that's one of those things. You know, I'm always afraid to talk to the mainstream about those types of advanced training approaches, because so many people out there think more is better. Oh, I'll just do HIIT every day for 20 minutes and I won't have to stay at the gym very long. And then they end up not doing well at all. So you have here that 40 minutes daily of moderate physical activity.
Well, no, I wouldn't say 40 minutes. Basically, they need to burn 14 kilocalories per kilogram per week.
Okay.
So it kind of depends on your weight.
So that should be the goal, to look at that number there.
Yeah. I guess if you want to, like, approximate it, right, so approximately 150 minutes of moderate exercise per week, or maybe 75 minutes of vigorous activity per week. But in terms of, you know, there's different ways to think about it, but in terms of, like, calories burned, it's about 14 kilocalories per kilogram per week.
Did you have people who reported that they were avid resistance trainers, weightlifters, and that sort of thing?
You know, no, that wasn't part of our. We just had just general physical activity, so we didn't break it down into more whether the type of physical activity is just more like how active you are, and we didn't separate it out into resistance versus aerobic.
Were there outliers?
Of course, there are always outliers.
Any of them interesting that, you know, you kind of went, wow, I didn't expect to see that?
Yeah, you know, I think what we wanted is we just wanted to look at because this number is so big, you know, again, it's about 5,000 people, we wanted to look at the general population and what are the trends in the general population, because it's hard to sort of have the N of one or two as the outlier and then apply it to most people. But, you know, my personal belief, of course, is exercise is great. You know, the more you do it and the more varied you do it so that, you know, your body doesn't get lazy, I think probably the better. So I do think that, you know, it's not just about aerobic training, of course, but, of course, strength training, flexibility, maybe a little bit of high intensity is all good.
And it sounds like you are an avid exerciser yourself.
You know, that's the interesting part. I'm actually not very good at sports, and I wouldn't say I'm an avid exerciser because I've never been very good at it. But with the research I'm doing, which is primarily exercise in improving insulin resistance and the risk for prediabetes and diabetes, I appreciate the value of exercise, and therefore I'm exercising more.
Oh my God! You know, you need to absolutely start exercising more, because you're going to become the patron saint of exercise equals, because, you know, there was a study done that we talked about on the show a few years ago that showed that postprandial activity, getting up and standing after a meal, had the same blood glucose management effects as the standard dose of metformin, just getting up after a meal. And so I thought, What a novel idea for someone to step up and do a series of commercials that show people getting up. You know, I'm Italian. The old Italians, after their biggest meal, they always went for a walk. Everybody took a walk after their meal. You know, a lot of cultures, being active after a meal is part of the culture. And I thought, what if it's as simple as getting people to get up and move around after a meal, that we could actually have an impact on type 2 diabetes in this country? And then I started talking to people. Well, not everybody lives in a safe neighborhood. Okay, fine. Get up and dance. Turn the music on and dance after a meal. Get up and clean. Get up after a meal. That small change could have a profound effect on disease in this population. And I think that any kind of activity is critical. We spend way too much time sitting still.
Yes. In fact, there's a very famous study called the Diabetes Prevention Study, which took people with prediabetes, and they randomized them either to dietary and lifestyle changes, metformin, or nothing. And they actually found that the people who did dietary and lifestyle changes did much better in terms of preventing development of diabetes than metformin. So I agree. I think dietary and lifestyle has a huge role. The main issue is sustainability. Because I think it's just easier for people to take a pill, unfortunately.
That's sad. And you know what? That's because that is what people believe. There's lots of negative effects from metformin that no one talks about. Downregulation of mTORC is going to lead to sarcopenia over time. I mean, it sensitizes fat cells. You don't see people on metformin just miraculously losing weight because their quote-unquote insulin resistance has been reversed. In fact, you see them getting fatter while on metformin. And there's some argument, well, they haven't changed their lifestyles. Exactly. Giving them a pill that allows them to remain broken with the illusion that they're protecting themselves, they're going to develop all the same diseases anyway.
Right. And, you know, I think a big concern about, let's say, exercise and a pill is that, let's say we give the pill that mimics aerobic training, right? If let's say we could. Well, you know, life isn't just about aerobic training. There's also resistance training.
Right.
And then there's also flexibility. And so, you know, how much can a pill recapitulate all of exercise? Of course, that's really, really challenging. And then what kind of exercise? So I think we're a long way from exercise and a pill, but conceptually, you know, everybody finds it very attractive.
What do you hope both clinicians and lay people take away from this most recent research?
You know, I think the main thing is that if somebody doesn't exercise, any type of exercise is good. And, you know, even if it's 15 minutes twice a day, you know, that is your 30 minutes. I mean, something is better than nothing. And to try to think about how you can incorporate activity into your life so that it's sustainable, whether you go walking with your dog, you go walking with your family, you go walking with your kids, because that, you know, what we don't want is somebody who kind of does it, but then doesn't keep it up. Really, from our study, it's a lifelong pursuit, it's a lifelong effect, and that keeping active really is protective. I mean, yes, we can talk about getting fancy and increasing a met, but if you're starting from nothing, something is better than nothing.
Yes. I've said those exact words for years on the show. I said, look, if you are listening to this show and you're new to this whole idea about living a more ancestral lifestyle, being more active, and you happen to be in really poor health, then maybe just standing during the commercial breaks of the TV shows that you watch all day is the first step. Maybe it's not walking around the street. Maybe it's just standing. But whatever it is, wherever you are, start where you are and use progressive techniques to increase your activity, even if it's just standing 50 times a day more often than you normally do.
Exactly. So, you know, what I often tell people is go walk your dog.
Yeah.
Don't drive the car and walk the dog. Don't ride your bike and walk the dog. Walk your dog.
Yeah.
It's good for you and it's good for the dog.
Yes, no, absolutely. Listen, Dr. Chow, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
Perfect. Thank you. Anything else?
No, that's it. Take care.
You have a great day. Thank you.
Okay.
Bye now.
All right, so we're going to take a quick commercial break, and when we come back, we're going to talk about the role of dopamine, age, and obesity, and how it influences the preference for sweet foods. Stay tuned.
Coupling is the holy grail of fat loss. Making mitochondria work harder raises body temperature and metabolic rate without the jitters of stimulants. Now there is an over-the-counter mitochondrial uncoupler that will let you shred your body down to the last pounds of body fat. It's Trojan Horse. This is the supplement breakthrough of the decade. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Trojan Horse banner ad. Use coupon code SHR and save 20% off your order today. BlackstoneLabs.com. Trojan Horse.
A legendary name in hardcore supplementation. Iron Mag Labs. 100% original, patent pending Andro compound. The most effective, hardcore, groundbreaking bodybuilding supplements in the world. Iron Mag Labs. Revolutionizing hardcore supplementation for more than a decade. Visit IronMagLabs.com. IronMagLabs.com.
Ever feel like you want something crunchy? From the company that gave us the Quest Protein Bar, now comes the Quest High Protein Potato Chips. With 21 grams of high quality protein and only 5 grams of carbs and no artificial ingredients. Just like Quest bars, you'll feel like you're cheating, but you're not. Go to superhumanradio.com and click the Quest High Protein Potato Chip banner ad today and get ready to be satisfied. Thanks to Quest Nutrition, chips just aren't what they used to be.
Nobel Prize-winning research shows telomeres are an important part of preventing cellular aging. Slowing down telomere shortenings promotes healthy cell replication and longevity. This is simple, folks. Supplement today with the longevity breakthrough of the century, Telos 95. Telos 95 provides the only scientifically validated telomere support ingredient in every capsule. Save 15% off when you use the code TELOS95. Go to superhumanradio.com today and click the Telos 95 banner ad. Age better with Telos 95, the cutting-edge technology that's a leap forward in the science of aging, with research that was conducted by world experts on telomere analysis using worldwide patented technology.
What do professional athletes such as Kobe Bryant and A-list celebrities such as Selma Hayek have in common? They are all touting the benefits of bone broth. But unless you have countless hours to cook every week or can hire your own personal chef, you're probably missing out on these critical nutrients. Osteobroth is a high-protein, standardized, consistent bone broth in a convenient powdered form. Use promo code SHR for 20% off at osteobroth.com.
There are a few products that I believe in the way I believe in CanSee eye drops. I've been using CanSee for 6 months now, and the changes in my vision are nothing short of amazing.
Wow, that's an old commercial. The truth is, I've been using CanSee eye drops for 11 years now, and I credit CanSee eye drops as being the reason that I do not need reading glasses at 58 years old. CanSee eye drops improves the quality and health of your eyes indefinitely. That's why I both use and endorse CanSee eye drops. Go to wisechoicemedicine.com and learn about how CanSee eye drops can improve the health of your eyes and the quality of your vision today.
The category killer is back. Mass Pro Synthogen, with results literally from workout one. You'll recover like you're a teenager again. If you've been pouring your heart out in the gym with little to nothing to show for it, you owe it to yourself to see the performance enhancing and cosmetic effects it can make almost immediately. One user said, "I wish I could have tried it sooner. I just ordered 2 more bottles." And another, "The overall single best bodybuilding supplement I have personally ever used." Visit CoachRobRegis.com or PredatorNutrition.com to learn more today. Mass Pro Synthogen. When you train with it, you'll gain with it.
This is the Superhuman Channel, where brawn and brains finally meet.
Well, as is the case, I don't have a guest. How do you like that? I really wanted to talk about this. Dopamine is very, very interesting to me. It's actually the hormone, the neural hormone of addiction. It plays a role in feeling love. It's really an amazing neurochemical, and I really wanted to talk about its linkage to craving sweet foods. But apparently Dr. Yanina Pepino either forgot that we had this interview set up or something has come up. So we're going to have to just reschedule her and get her back on the show at another time, because I do want to talk about this. This is a very, very important topic. But I've got nothing else to talk about right now. So I'm just going to go ahead and say thank you for listening today, and we'll see everybody tomorrow with more Superhuman Radio.